You're listening to the Superpod HeroCast, a Night Shift radio production.
And may I say, are you recording?
I am recording. Are you recording?
Yeah, and I would like to say, I hurt myself today.
Oh no, what happened?
Just so I could feel.
The non-official theme song of this movie? Sure.
Oh. Oh, hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the Superpod HeroCast.
Guys with beers talking about movies with capes.
Episode 135. I'm Casey Ryan.
And I'm Todd Panic.
And we watched Logan.
I'm going to need all the bass for pronouncing this title. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, what a phenomenal movie. God.
Did we get it out of the way and say, fuck you, Ethan Hawke?
Did he talk shit about Logan? Because where's my pitchfork?
Oh, my God, do you not remember this?
No.
So he was like, this was when Logan came out, and they were like, oh, now that comic book movies are getting more serious, would you ever do a comic book movie? Blah, blah, blah. He's like, I mean, I like Logan. It had good themes, but in the end, wasn't it just a guy running around in yellow tights? And everyone was like, well, Logan never puts on a costume of any kind.
Clearly you never and saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, oh, well, I never saw it. But it was just this way of being like, I'll never do a superhero property. Dick. Except then you do one of the most wasted superhero properties.
Oh, yeah. Fuck that.
Loved Moonlight until the very last episode.
Yeah.
Moonlight was great, and all of a sudden it was just like, oh, it's kaiju fighting each other, not Moon Knight fighting?
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, but you know what movie didn't suck?
This one.
Oh.
And I'll also get out of the way. Dear TSP at Sea Army, you know how I love to go after hair length and beard length and all that. Yes. In every single scene in this movie, nay, in scenes where Logan is at one angle and then he goes to another angle, that hair length, beard length changes inches. And it, sometimes it's a fake beard because of the reshoots. Mm-hmm. But guess what? Much like when we did Wrath of Khan on Where No Mom Has Gone Before, my hit Star Trek podcast, subcategory co-hosted by mothers. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't fucking care with this one. This movie's so fucking delightful that I don't care that there are scenes in this movie where it's like, well, that was shot one day. Uh-huh. That was shot 4 weeks later. Yeah, and then this was shot 2 days after that.
Yeah.
Like, they trimmed it up. It's must have been an editing nightmare.
And you know what's even better is, so my document for my own notes, not our shared plot summary, mine is titled Logan Noir, because this was the first time I watched the black and white version.
Hey.
Oh, my God. Oh my God. And
how beautiful does this movie look in black and white?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would definitely say the first time watching it, just watch it in color. It's a phenomenal movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But then on a rewatch, 100% grab the black and white. It's just so good. Oh, God.
Because it makes Pat Stew look so much gaunter than he is.
Oh, God.
He lost 20 pounds to be the emaciated. It also creates a major continuity error because we know from X-Men Apocalypse that we've done already that Xavier is bald in this universe. This must be an alternate universe. This must be an alternate universe. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe I'll stop there because
let's go with that.
He's balding. He has his normal.
He's got the hair in the back. Which, of course, you know, having that straggly hair makes him look even older, even more decrepit. It works so well. Oh my God. Okay, and listen, THPHC Army. We're just gonna gush. This is gonna be an all happy episode.
Uh-huh. I got nothing bad to say about this movie.
The only thing bad I have to say will be when we discuss the IMDb score at the end. Because what the fuck
you nerds.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Well, before we can do any more gushing, I think what we need to do is our catchphrase. And that is, since we are
guys with beers talking about movies with capes,
what are we drinking?
So I moseyed my way over to our good friends, Branching Out Bottle Shop here in Township 5 in Camillus. and beautiful day. It's unseasonably warm here in Syracuse. Sun is shining. Both doors are wide open. Barley greeted me as soon as I walked up to the door, and it was phenomenal. After a little bit of looking, found a beer from a brewery that we have not drank before. So Kettlehead Brewing Company out of Tilton, New Hampshire. I wasn't sure what theme I was going to go with. I would say, even in a movie series in which we've seen Apocalypse, in which we've seen Days of Future Past, we've seen some dark shit. There is no bleaker X-Men movie. There might be no bleaker movie that we've done in this podcast than the future that is presented in this. I mean, it's so depressing. It almost might seem like, you know, what's the point of getting up in the day? Like, there's no hope. The sun doesn't rise at all. And that is the beer we are drinking. It is Kettlehead Brewing Company's Imperial Stout. It has maple, chocolate, coffee, and vanilla notes. It is 10%. It is 10.8% alcohol by volume, which explains why you and I each only have one of these. And I got to grab my glass because I forgot it in the other room. So I'll be right back.
You fucking amateur.
Yep.
Hey, everybody. While Todd's gone, let me just say, he hasn't said it yet, but you all know from listening to this episode, this is the birthday episode. He hasn't said it, but this is his secret birthday gift to me. I love Imperial Stouts. Maple, chocolate, coffee, and vanilla. It's like this is fucking made for me. But he doesn't remember that this is my birthday episode because Todd's a little scatterbrained at times. That's why we love him. That's why he's my best friend.
Okay, as I was saying, I have my beer and my glass right here. So cannot wait to try this one.
Cracking it open as we speak, my friend. Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, buddy.
Oh, it's just, look at it pour. It's like chocolate syrup pouring it into the glass.
Fuck a duck. Oh, my God. Oh, it's going to be so fucking good.
Oh, cheers, my friend. Happy
cheers, buddy.
Happy birthday movie, buddy.
Hey, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh.
Oh, fuck.
That is.
Oh, God, it just keeps getting better.
Wow. Holy cow. That is a delicious beer. Oh my gosh.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. And yes, TSPHC Army. Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
You'll find that out when you edit this.
Okay. All right. You know, I had a feeling. I was like, I wonder if Casey's going to take that moment to address the audience. I guess I'll have to wait and see. All right.
There's a bear shit in the woods?
That's fair. Once again, if you're in central New York and you have not visited Branching Out Bottle Shop, you're really missing out. They have the finest beer selection you're going to find anywhere. They are good friends. Stop in, say hi. Give Barley the shop dog a scratch behind the ears and pick up some great beers.
So there's no Almost Cast that I could find.
Okay.
But I would like to spend a minute on Daphne Keegan.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit. I haven't watched this movie in a minute. This is not something, unless you've got that brain where like Pete Holmes' favorite movie is There Will Be Blood, which is not a movie I could sit through often because it is so bleak and dark. But comedians find that kind of stuff more more refreshing and more what's the word I'm looking for? Like soothing and calming because it's not high energy funny, which is what Pete Holmes is. Mm-hmm. So it's been a minute since I watched this film because you just are emotionally drained at the end of this movie. And if you aren't, well,
then you're not watching. You should rethink.
Yeah, you're not watching. damn it. Okay.
Sorry, I stepped on your joke. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't step on my joke. You stepped on another thing that I thought of. And I remember Daphne Keegan being absolutely fantastic in this movie. But
Daphne Keen.
Oh, excuse me. Keen.
Yeah, yeah.
Being fantastic in this film. But then, like, rewatching it tonight, I was like, fuck, damn, she is really, like, there's a strong rumor that X-23 is going to show up in Deadpool and Wolverine with her playing it.
She deserves to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not mad about that. So I saw this with our mutual buddy, Dan. Mm-hmm. After it came out, after it had gotten all the raves, it lived up to the hype. I was so happy about that. But we saw it at our local movie theater here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, credits start rolling. We're all very sad. And then one guy in the back corner just goes, well, that fucking sucked.
What?
And I went, the audacity. We all turned at him like, what the fuck movie were you watching?
Jesus.
And I wanted to go up like, did the death of the character at the end suck, or did the whole movie suck?
Yeah.
I had so many questions for that man, but so, I was not interested.
So Daphne Keene is a Spanish and British actress. She's born in 2005. Mm-hmm. This movie is in production in 2016. So she's, you know, 11 in this movie. She's not done much.
She was on His Dark Material for a number of years.
Yeah, which I never watched. Got into. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Colin. I know you tried to get me to watch it a fuck ton of times.
She was also a regular role on a 2015 television drama series. Looks like a BBC, The Refugees.
Okay,
I have not heard of. But, nope. But I mean, that's it. She does The Refugees. Actually, His Dark Materials comes after Logan. So
she pretty much got His Dark Material because of Logan.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She's been in that sense, and then COVID happened. So that's probably why, you know, she's been secretly, hopefully, filming a scene for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, she is just amazing. Just amazing. Oh, The Acolyte, which is the series we have not seen yet. She joined the cast of that. Oh, that'll be good.
Yeah, you forget that she's 11 because she's a little, I mean, she's not tall per se, but she's got a more mature face than your average 11-year-old. And then she starts talking and that little 11-year-old voice comes out of her and you're like, oh man, yeah, you're sure, you are 11. It's like, me.
Right, like, right.
What?
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God.
Because she doesn't talk for the first almost hour of the film that she's in.
Yeah. Actually, probably even more. She doesn't talk until after Charles dies, right?
Whoa.
I mean, listen.
Spoilers.
I'm kidding. Yeah, I think she doesn't talk until it's just the two of them after the attack by X-24.
If I remember right.
Yeah.
Which, did you feel like they were initially going to try and get Liev Schreiber back and then... is there some reason, or were they fucking with Logan by making X-24 look like Liev Schreiber Sabretooth?
Well, I think C, none of the above. I think it's in universe. I think the rationale would be like he's a clone and he's raised like the that is a very kind of like practical, no nonsense haircut, right? Like not too long to
with very impractical, very nonsense mutton chops.
Which I think which we gotta assume that's how he grows his beards, right?
But that's how Sabretooth looked in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good point. I didn't think of that.
As soon as he showed up on screen, I was like, why are they making him look like Liev Schreiber?
Yeah.
Why are they reminding us of a bad Wolverine movie in the middle of this fucking phenomenal Wolverine movie?
I didn't pick up on that, but now that you point it out, I certainly see it. That's an interesting observation.
Like, in-universe, like, oh, in case he has to go up, like, I kind of wanted a moment where, well, I guess we get it. I guess we get it when he's coming down the stairs. Logan totally looks at him like, you look like me, but you also look like Victor.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that.
I'm onto something here.
Yeah, maybe.
James Mangold, if you'd like to explain, please, we are more than welcoming.
We don't need to talk about Wolverine as a character, but I do want to talk about one of the big inspirations for this story. And if you have not read this comic, go grab it. And I have made no bones about sharing the fact that I'm not reading a lot of current Marvel or any DC comics. It's true. Just because as I've said, right, I think that it's hard to keep finding new original stories to tell with these characters that are, you know, 80 years old. But some of the exceptions are just brilliant, and this would fall into that category for me. So Mark Millar, who's a, you know, very well-known comic writer, the person we thank for the Ultimates, which gave us, you know, the iteration of the Marvel heroes that we got in the MCU, wrote Old Man Logan, which is one of my
phenomenal
favorite, modern era stories. And it's an alternate future history that is bleak and dark. There is essentially no, there's essentially no plot points that map from one to the other. But
except that he is old.
Yeah.
It's someone else who makes him do it. But Wolverine Logan in that is the one who kills all the X-Men because he sees all of his own
foes, of course,
right? Omega Red and all that.
Yeah. Mysterio tricks him into thinking that.
Is it Mysterio? It's Mysterio.
So one of the.
Oh, I thought it was an X-Men. Yeah,
no, one of the stories. So again, if you haven't read Old Man Logan, go grab it. It's phenomenal. But the villains basically have this idea of like, we'll swap. Like, let us fight the heroes we don't normally fight. They're not, Batman knows who Joker is. He knows what his playbook is. He knows what to expect, so to speak.
Yeah.
If Bizarro Superman comes at him, obviously Batman's prepared for everything. But this idea that, it's a different challenge.
If Sinestro comes after him,
sure.
It might take him a second. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, there's no plot points. There's no characters really that translate from... Yeah. Old Man Logan to the movie Logan, but what I think they absolutely took was the tone and the feel and the mood, which, oh my God, is just, again, watching it is in the black and white, just mwah, chef's kiss. Sorry, let me stop gushing.
Go ahead. It makes it so much more beautiful. We once again have a character that started on an animated series that becomes in comic.
Oh.
X-23.
Oh, you're kidding.
X-23 is X-Men Evolution.
I did not know that.
I remember when she showed up on that and she had the foot claw thing, and I was like, oof, that's kind of stupid. But then when Charles explains it, I was like, all right, it's kind of kick-ass, fine.
Agree.
When she became a comic book character, while we're gushing over the wonderful Mark Millar, may I take a minute to bitch about Brian Michael Bendis, because he decided to make Laura, X-23, whatever she... There's something about that where she's not called... Oh, she doesn't want to be called X-23 anymore. She's Laura. Actually, she's now Wolverine.
Oh, really?
In the comics. Yeah. Because I believe Logan's still dead. Yeah. I don't know.
In 2015, the character succeeded her father in adopting the name and costume of Wolverine in the series All New Wolverine.
So when she was introduced in the comics... by Brian Michael Bendis, Laura was a prostitute.
Of course.
To which I say, but why?
Yeah, but why? Yeah.
Why is this something we need to do? Well, is she, because she's a girl? Because she's... I don't like Brian Michael Bendis. It's pretty,
fair,
pretty clear.
Fair. He is a creator that is kind of polarizing, I think.
My main problem with him is he takes what most comic book writers will do in like an issue and a half, maybe two issues, and stretches it out to six or seven issues. I'm like, motherfucker, I know you got a quota to fill for the year,
right?
But maybe tell a better story. I don't know. Just
okay. No, that's fair.
That's me crazy. A fair
criticism.
And he killed Peter Parker.
Yeah, that's true. He did.
But he also gave us Miles Morales. So
gives with one hand, takes with the other. That's tough. Yeah. All right. Well, last thing from a production standpoint. Actually, well, a few things.
Banana stand.
Yeah.
All this money in the banana stand.
Money-wise is a 2017 release. It has a budget of $97 million. It does $619 million at the box office. Phenomenal. Hmm. I think, is this the highest grossing X-Men movie?
I think you are right in that. I remember.
It's the best rated. Best reviewed, best rated, certainly ever.
You're goddamn right, and it should be.
Let's see. Yeah.
And it is probably why, and this is not a spoiler, he's in the trailer, and the movie's now called his title name. This is why they brought Hugh back.
Sure.
For X-Men and Wolverine. Because people fucking love this character.
I mean, Hugh Jackman is a phenomenal actor, and... although he's always good in everything he does, this is a story. Oh, my God. This story just gives him so much to work with. Holy cow.
And if you're newer to the podcast and weren't listening way back when we did X-Men, he was the third choice.
Right. after Dougray Scott and
Dougray Scott was cast.
Yep.
Heard himself doing Mission Impossible.
Yep.
Two. They wanted Russell Crowe.
Interesting.
And Russell said, nah, I'm not going to do it, but here's my other Australian friend. He could probably do it too. And yeah. And the rest is fucking history.
Did you see
And it's that? Also so fun to watch that one because Hugh admits he's like, yeah, I wasn't doing any work. Wasn't really in shape. And then they called me and I'm like, oh, I got a lot of shirtless scenes in this movie. He got himself in like as good a shape as he could. But then X2 on, he's just fucking ripped. Even in this, he's in good shape.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember he always shares his workout, you know, pics and stuff as he's getting in shape for these. God, he's a fucking beast. Did you see that just the other day, Paul D'Amato was an actor. He played Dr. Hook in the 1977 film Slapshot. He was the inspiration that for John Byrne's modeling of Wolverine.
Oh, fuck. I could see that. Yeah. I didn't know that. But yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he just passed. I thought that was interesting timing.
Slapshot, shot here in?
In Syracuse. Yeah.
In the War Memorial.
That's right. That's right.
Now call something else. Hospitals are just taking over all major venues, and it's really unsettling.
That's still the On Center, I think.
No. Oh, the War Memorial is now like upstate New York, upstate medical arena or some fucking bullshit.
Upstate Medical University Arena. Yep. Okay.
It's dear TSPHC Army, if you don't live in Syracuse, most of our major venues now are hospital owned, and it's, I don't know what the fuck's happening.
Well, the long-running shorthand for Syracuse's industries are med and ed, medical and education.
Oh, yeah. That's very true.
You know, Carrier doesn't exist anymore, so what are you going to do? All right, so that was the money. Let me talk for a little bit about some of the production credits. So three gentlemen get writing credits. I'm going to talk about the last one. I'll talk about the third one last. Scott Frank is a writer, director, producer. He wrote The Wolverine, Marley and Me, The Interpreter, Minority Report, Get Shorty. There's some really good movies in there.
Yeah.
Michael Green, a writer and producer, wrote Green Lantern, Blade Runner 2049, Jungle Cruise. I think he might have been the showrunner for one season. He's got a lot of writing credits from American Gods, which was for me, a disappointing adaptation of one of my favorite books. He wrote Alien Covenant. He wrote six episodes of Smallville.
I'm going to guess six episodes I didn't like because his resume is not doing anything for me.
And then the third person that gets a writing credit is also the director, James Mangold. So let's gush for a minute about James Mangold. And I just pulled some of his movies. The Wrestler, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which, again, we didn't need a fifth if there had only been three. But given that there were four, we needed a fifth, and he did a fine job. Copland, which is Sylvester Stallone's best work ever. You know, fight me on that.
Which Aubrey knows someone in that movie.
You're kidding.
The guy who played Sky Masterson when she was at Cortland Repertory Theater with Colin.
Yeah.
He's in Copland. He's also in Regarding Henry.
What's
his
name? He's
the one when the Sky Masterson. I don't know. He's the one in Regarding Henry when Henry comes back to the law firm. He's the one who turns around and goes, "You're looking good, Henry. Looking good."
Huh. I really like Regarding Henry. That might be one of the first movies I remember Harrison Ford, like, not Han Solo or Indiana Jones. Like,
and I think Harrison Ford, like a lot of actors in Hollywood, did he get a nom for that? Did he even get nominated? He definitely didn't win. He has no Oscar, but I don't think he even got nominated. So he just went, fuck you, I'm going to play what I want. Like, I'm not going to try and get awards.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at this list of the cast to try and figure out who that might be. For non-theater folks like me, Sky Masterson is a role in the movie, in the musical Guys and Dolls.
Yes, sir. Yay. I already said that, so I don't know why you need.
I blank out anything related to musicals, so the fact that I remember that.
You blank out most of the time when I talk.
What? I'm sorry, what did you say?
You fuck. You absolutely.
Could it be Ralph Byers? He looks too old. That he can't be.
No. Let me look. Let me look.
Kirby Mitchell.
Hang on. I need to look at this picture. All right. Just shut the fuck up for a second. Oh, it's Method Man. That's who it is. No. Yeah. Wait, is this him? No, it's not Sean Cullen.
Are you looking at the cast of Guarding Henry?
No, I'm looking at the cast of Copland.
Got it.
Oh, let's try this. Actor, Copland, and me.
I know that IMDb will tell you, like, you can give them two actors and they'll give you any movies they haven't seen. Bruce Altman? That can't be right. Is Bruce Altman in Copland?
No, that's not.
Oh, he is. That, oh, he isn't. He is in both movies.
Yeah, but that's not him. That's Garrett. Bruce Altman's a. Bruce Altman reminds me of the guy, the CFO of Dunder Mifflin.
David Wallace.
Yeah, he's got that David Wallace feel. Yeah,
I can see that. Yeah, and he's 68 years old, so maybe not. Well, okay.
Geraldo Rivera. I forgot. Okay. I'm not going to find it. Okay. I will. You ask.
That might
you
ask. Get cut.
you fuck. No, don't cut it.
Well, just no,
cut.
I'm saying it didn't go anywhere. So,
what no, are you, do with it? You ask Aubrey. I'll ask Colin and see if either one of them remember this guy's name.
Sky Masterson at what production? Cortland Rep?
Cortland Rep. Yep.
Okay.
With Colin.
Oh, Guys in Dallas with Colin. Got it.
Yes, sir.
So, James Mangold, Walk the Line. The remake 310 to Yuma, which was wonderful.
Yeah. Christian Bale, Russell Crowe. Yeah. Good movie.
Yeah. The Wolverine.
Mm-hmm. Three-fourths of a great Wolverine movie.
Yes. Agree. Yeah, agree. Ford versus Ferrari.
Phenomenal movie.
Right. And James Mangold is a frequent writer/director. So of those, all of them, but 310 to Yuma, The Wolverine, and Ford versus Ferrari. He also has writing credits for those as well. One of his early directing pieces was a 2001 film, Kate and Leopold, starring Hugh Jackman.
Have you ever seen Kate and Leopold?
I feel like I've seen it maybe on cable or something, like, you know, like in passing. I don't think I've ever sat down and watched it.
It's so fucking delightful.
Really?
Oh, it's so good.
Is that a time travel one?
Yeah. He falls off the Brooklyn Bridge and falls in love with Meg Ryan.
Yes, yes. And
Leo
Schreiber's
in that, too.
Oh, he sure is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at it. Yeah, it's a cute movie. I'm a sucker for a rom-com because it's always the same formula. Yeah. So you're just like, I don't really need to. I can just kind of shut my brain off a little bit and enjoy really good acting because I know they're going to end up together.
Sure. Oh, my God. Look at this cast. Meg Ryan, Hugh Jackman, Liev Schreiber. Natasha Lyonne, Bradley Whitford.
Yeah.
Kristen Schaal, Viola Davis.
One of her very first things. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely some other that guy, that girl actors.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good movie. Oh, and it's wild to watch that and go, and you also made Logan.
Yeah.
You're this very sweet, innocuous rom-com, and then you also made one of the most violent comic book movies ever made.
God. You know, let's talk about the joke, because I just watched Deadpool 2 with Jack, because he's digging these. The moment in the beginning where Wade is playing with the little musical, the mobile.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the Logan affair. He's talking about Logan Wolverine riding his coattails with a rated R. The rated R was such a great choice here. Like, well, actually, but I'm going to save it because I've got a point about this later in the movie.
I also have a point, and we are going to be on opposite ends.
Oh.
Only for a moment in the film, first watch. I agree with you 100%. My first watch of this movie, there's a moment where I went, uh-oh. And I will explain it when we get to it.
Okay.
And I think we can get to it because I don't think we have anything else here in the preamble. So I think what I can say right now is roll that film. All right. So before we start the synopsis, I just want to say I really love they pulled out the old black and white 20th Century Fox logo for the opening of the movie. Like, And then, you know, filmed in CinemaScope. I'm like, this movie wasn't fucking filmed in CinemaScope, but I love that you did that.
Yeah,
it just puts you in the right mood if you are watching the Logan Noir like we are watching.
Sure, sure.
Okay, so in 2029, for those keeping score, that is half a decade from now. That's a weird feeling.
Sure.
No mutants have been born in 25 years. An aging Logan suffers as his healing ability is failing.
I mean, I'll gush here. This opening scene is just amazing. And in two main ways I think of that. First, seeing, like, displayed for us how far Logan has fallen, right? Yeah. Sets the stakes here. Oh my God, this is bleak. But what Jackman does, again, a phenomenal actor, you know, showing how ferocious the rage is, you know, still despite, you know, the body failing. I remember just being absolutely mesmerized by this movie right from this opening start. And in black and white, it's 10 times better. Oh my God. So phenomenal.
Yeah. I wrote that less than 5 minutes into this film, and we know the entire tone of the rest of the movie. It's going to be violent, brutal, and unforgiving. And I'm fucking here for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get this great jump of he gets out of the car.
Those are chrome plated lugs. You're gonna strip the plating flakes off. You know, this is the lease. No one's gonna pay to ride.
He gets shot. He gets up and he's still like not pissed yet. You're like,
guys, seriously, you don't want to do this.
Come on, Wolverine, let's go.
This is
say the line, Bart, you know, like you wanted to rage. And then he does, and you go, oh God, stop raging.
Yeah.
Stop. Because, you know, like in X2, when he's killing all those mercenaries in the mansion, he swipes his claws, they fall off screen. You're seeing people get stabbed to the head, arms get cut off, faces slashed off. You're like, oh my God, I wasn't ready for this level of violence.
So I have that note later in the movie, but
when they're in Oklahoma City? Yeah.
But this is what we wanted, and we didn't know what it would look like in X2 when those troops assault the school. This is exactly, like, this is what Wolverine should be. Oh, my God.
100%. It's great, but it is jarring at first. Like, holy shit, he just stabbed that guy through the head, and you see the little ends of the claws coming through its skull. It's, what the fuck?
Right. One of the things I really loved was a few minutes farther in, as we understand what his reality is, he drives a limo.
Yeah.
When he's at the cemetery and he's drinking the beer, you know, before his, you know, he's got it riding in. Watching him walk, he puts
a limp on.
He seems so frail, right? It is so jarring from the Wolverine we know. Oh my God. And again, to your point, 5 minutes in, you know, this is the movie we've got. You may not have you certainly did not go to a superhero movie expecting this, but holy fuck, it's so good.
I mean, kudos to the people who did the trailer for this. They set us up for a despot movie of just really, really harsh and sad.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, that made it seem like it was going to be this serious movie, and then we get that name redacted that was made into a joke. As you said, he's working as a limo driver in El Paso, Texas. I love Mangold's Show Don't Tell.
Uh-huh.
You know, he gets out of the limo and you can see the sign for El Paso, for the exit for El Paso there. She's like, oh, we're in El Paso.
Yep.
They didn't need like the giant MCU, like El Paso, Texas.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
If you're paying attention, you're going to know where we are. It's really smart.
Let's be honest. This is a film, you know, and
this is a film.
And I,
capital F-I-L-M. Yeah. All the letters are capital in this movie.
Yeah. And I have nothing against popcorn movies.
Yeah. We wouldn't be doing this podcast if we did.
Right.
But this may be the most film movie we do.
Yeah.
This is film.
So, you know, some of the reviews of this have called it, you know, some have called it the greatest superhero or one of the greatest superhero films ever made. I mean, so, The Dark Knight is often lauded as, you know, art, film, cinema, elevating the genre. Well, you got to put this one right next to it. And frankly, maybe it's my biases.
No, it's better than The Dark Knight.
I'm watching this over The Dark Knight. Yeah, 100%.
And to bring it back to DC, what this does that a lot of other superhero movies don't do, even if they're trying to be serious, aside from the fact that he has metal bones and claws come out of his hands, verisimilitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very, very real movie. You feel this world more than a lot of other superhero movies that we've done.
And this world somehow is darker than the dark future that Cable comes back from in Deadpool 2. It's darker than Days of Future Past. It's darker than...
Same future. That's the little wink nod there.
What's
it's
that?
The exact same future. Cable's coming from Days of Future Past future.
Oh, right. Oh, yes.
It's been confirmed that he is. Like, sure. You look behind him, it could practically just keep going and go into the beginning of Days of Future Past with Charles, whatever the fuck he says in that one. It's not mutation. It's something else.
Sure.
Speaking of which, he and the mutant tracker Caliban, played by the wonderful Stephen Merchant, take care of 97-year-old Charles Xavier. I do like when Boyd, what's his name?
Boyd Holbrook, who's one of his best things in this movie.
Yeah. He's always good, but he's really good in this. He's like,
Charles Xavier, America's most wanted octogenarian.
I'm a nonagenarian, actually.
Did you watch Behind the Candelabra about Liberace?
I did not.
So it's a phenomenal movie. And
is Boyd in that?
He plays the little twink that Michael Douglas drops Matt Damon for later in their relationship. Yeah.
Spoilers.
But Boyd Holbrook is kind of an effeminate twinkie type, like in that movie, which is so, so vastly different from just like any other role I've seen him in, Narcos and Justified, City Primeval, right? Like he's a badass. It's worth watching. It's a good movie. Yeah.
I love the way he delivers certain lines, but my personal favorite, it was in the trailer and it made me go, ooh, I'm going to pay attention to this guy. When X-23 is walking towards him and he goes,
Laura, no, no.
Like a rabid dog is walking towards him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such a great line reading.
Someone trying to control a situation that they know they cannot control.
Yeah, his inner monologue is fuck, 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 fuck.
Yeah.
Okay, so 97-year-old Charles Xavier, founder of the X-Men, in an abandoned smelting plant in northern Mexico. Xavier suffers from dementia that causes him to have destructive telepathic seizures. So weirdly, this movie gets the multiverse levels even before the MCU did, because there's a talk of the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
But he also mentions that Logan was hooked on barbiturates, which is not something that is in X-Men 1.
Well, I'm sorry. Logan can't be hooked on barbiturates. He can't get drunk. He can't be drugged. It's, you know, his healing factor.
Well, weirdly, in this movie, it seems like his healing factor has lessened so much that he can get drunk.
Oh, well, yeah, because, you know, this is a subtext, and I think that us nerds, right, would piece it out. It's clear that the adamantium is killing him. But
no, 100%.
But there's no mechanism, there's no magneto to strip the to the adamantium from his bones, remove it. It's been bonded with his skeleton. He's fucked. There's no way to remove it, and it's killing him.
Yep. So there's that. And then Logan says there hasn't been a new mutant born in 25 years, which means the last mutant that was born was in 2004, which does not add up with the timeline of the normal X-Men universe. It's these little subtle things that make me love this movie. Okay. They're not going, hey, kids, different universe than the other X-Men movies.
Sure.
Which is why, like, they did that thing when they announced Hugh was coming back for Deadpool. They're like, okay, yes, Logan still counts. I'm like, yeah, because it's a fucking alternate universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not this universe. So it's fine.
Yep. Agree.
And plus, we know there's multiverse now.
Yeah.
So he has these telepathic seizures, that one of which injured 600 people and killed several X-Men the year prior. The year prior? Is that set in stone in this movie?
Yes. Yes.
So that explains why Logan is so fucking pissed at Charles.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like time has healed all wounds. It's still fresh.
Fuck.
The first time I watched this movie, I missed the fact that Charles mistakenly accuses Logan of having done something as the reason that they're in this shitty existence. I caught it last night. I was like, oh, fuck. And Logan at any time could say, no, Charles, you fucking killed the X-Men. But Logan, for all the ferocious beast that he is, cannot inflict that hurt on his friend. This movie is a masterpiece.
Yes, 100% agree. Question, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming Logan was in Westchester when this happened, which is, they say later that the incident in Westchester County. So it was the X Mansion, plus I'm assuming all of Westchester County sounds about right for 600 people, or the surrounding area of the X Mansion.
Yeah.
Did Logan only survive because of his healing factor?
Yes, because Caliban says that early on.
Jesus Christ. I missed that.
Logan is kind of living this like hard scrabble kind of existence, scraping together enough money to buy via illicit backdoor deals, presumably some kind of an anti-seizure medication to prevent Charles from having these fits. But when he brings the latest dose, Caliban's like,
would it be considered nagging if I was to repeat my previous observation that the dose is too low to suppress the seizures?
It's what the guy gave me. I wasn't in a position to make demands.
Well, I almost died this morning. That seizure
was barely a minute.
It felt a lot longer than a minute. I couldn't breathe. You're less affected. You know he needs a higher dose.
I think, yeah, that's... It's the exact same as the, you know, ridiculously bad X-Men 3, right? Like, Logan's the only one that can kill Jean, because even though she's shredding the flesh off his bones, his healing factor, when it's working, can keep him alive. That's my headcanon, is that... I mean, even in, you know, in Oklahoma City, when Charles has his attack.
And yeah, and X-23 are the only ones that can move.
Yeah, X-23 isn't really doing anything until he shows up, but I think that's because she doesn't know what's happening. Right. Logan knows exactly what's happening. Jumping ahead, how fucking badass is that when he's sticking his claws into the wall to pull himself?
And then mercenaries as he's walking by them.
Fuck.
That's God. The best. He's just like, chick, chick, chick. Oh, you're a mercenary?
Yeah,
you're dead.
Dead. Yeah.
It's so fucking rad.
Oh my God.
And they all fall when the anti-seizure medicine is put in. Yeah, it's so good.
And you know, we've gushed a little bit, but the note here, again, Sir Patrick Stewart, he's always been amazing as Charles, but what he brings in this movie.
I gave you a family.
They're gone now.
Logan, what did you do? What did you do? Answer me! Why are we here? No one should live like this, drugged in a fucking tank.
For your own good.
No, it's not. You're waiting for me to die.
He must have read the script and went, holy shit.
He went, holy shit.
That's right.
Sonny, could you read this script for me?
That's right.
It's wonderful.
Oh, my God.
I honestly, I think this may have been why he wanted to revisit Picard.
Sure.
Because Picard gets this kind of trauma. You find out that his mother suffered from schizophrenia and killed herself. And his father was abusive, which is something from Patrick Stewart's real existence.
Oh, I didn't know that.
His father was an abusive man. He had a PTSD.
Oh, wow.
And back then, they were just like, well, what are you going to do? And he beat the shit out of his wife and Patrick. Oh, and so... Yeah. Sorry to bring down the podcast there, folks.
Yeah, let's bring back to the uplifting story of Logan.
I think maybe he saw this and went, maybe there's a way to make Picard's tragedy more tragic. Yeah. Like, they just scratched the surface. Like, the Borg thing, when you really think about it, his humanity was taken away from him, and he was forced to commit mass atrocities. Murder.
Yeah.
Killing all those people in Wolf 359. Like, that's going to fuck with a guy, no matter how stoic they are.
Sure.
That's going to fuck with you a little bit. So I think that's why we get Picard. And may I say, thank you, James Mangold, because Picard was a fucking delight.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, look.
You never watched it.
No, but I'm happy to, you know, you get great actors and give them great material to work with, and then we benefit, right? Profit.
Yeah, 100%.
Logan reluctantly agrees to escort Gabriela Lopez, a former nurse for biotechnology corporation Alkali Transigen.
Alkali.
Is it Alkali?
Yeah, Alkali Lake. That's what they're going off of. They put these on. Alkali.
Oh, yeah, that's an L. That's an L in front of it. I'm trying not to. I didn't have my glasses on. Son of a bitch.
Todd.
fucking old.
I got my nun, and I'm a decade younger than you.
The problem is the distance where my screen is. It's like just too far that the glasses aren't really. Anyways, okay.
Cry me a river, you old man.
Oh, how fucking dare you. You 43-year-old.
I'm 40. This is that, even though we're doing my birthday episode, we're recording this at the 42. Rare time of the year. Oh, no, you're not 40.
I'm not 53. I'm not 53 either. Yeah.
No, well, soon. Friday.
It's Friday.
That's right. Time stamp this episode nicely.
Yeah. Gabriela Lopez, a former nurse for biotechnology corporation Alkali Transigen, and a young girl named Laura to Eden, a supposed refuge near the American-Canadian border. After finding Gabriela dead, Logan is confronted by her killer, Donald Pierce.
So this is the first time we mentioned Boyd Holcomb. So I need to go back to the scene when he gets the drugs.
As I live and breathe, the Wolverine, and he's a junkie now.
Who the fuck are you?
We had the opening scene.
Yep.
Where F-bombs are dropped galore.
Sure.
Fine. That's a hot and heavy scene. Then we have a couple dropped at the funeral.
Wolverine.
Fuck.
Please! I'm in trouble!
Get the fuck away from me!
Which also, like, the girl, the woman who's getting into the limousine.
Who is that?
I don't know, some crazy lady. Don't worry.
Maybe also say sorry. This woman is at her loved one's funeral, and this woman's screaming at him.
Nah.
He doesn't care. Logan doesn't give a fuck.
Nope, doesn't care. Listen, he does not have any fucks left to give, so.
Well, he does. He has a lot, because he says it all the time. And this is leads me to, I distinctly remember that the moment when they're in the limousine, the amount of fucks that are said during that scene.
Fuck, fuck!
I was like, oh no, they may have gone too far, because it felt like when a 13-year-old discovers that word, and it's just like, fucking this, fuck, fuck, fuck. It's Cartman in South Park.
You can't take fucking school, you fucking fat ass!
Kyle!
Why the fuck not?
Aaron!
Dude, you just said fuck again!
Stanley!
Ooh!
Kenny!
What's the big deal? It doesn't hurt anybody. Fuck, fuckity, fuck, fuck, fuck.
Like, I got nervous. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah. I watching it now, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this is just the feel of the movie, and I'm okay with it. But I got a little nervous. And I was like, oh God, what are we doing? There's a lot of fucks going by here.
I will say Donald Pierce is a comic book character that goes way back.
Is he a cyborg?
He is a cyborg.
Okay.
He's originally introduced to us. He's a member of the Hellfire Club.
Oh.
He is the White Bishop. He's not a mutant. He hates mutants and has joined the Hellfire Club to better position himself to kill mutants.
Well, I mean, that's Donald Pierce in this. When Donald Pierce says mutie,
you're fucked now, mutie.
It's a slur.
It's got all the venom that slur is supposed to have. Like,
yeah.
Like, to the point where I just said it, I'm like, am I allowed to say this? Like, I'm allowed to say it because it's not a real slur, but it just, when he says it, I was like, hey, you can't say that.
Yeah. It very much has that feel. Yeah, yeah. So Donald Pierce is Transigen's cyborg chief of security.
Mm-hmm.
Pierce is looking for Laura, who is stowed away in Logan's limo and has powers similar to his.
Yeah, yeah, she does. Except she does everything just more violent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. Well, it's the same as X-24, right? Like, essentially raised in a test tube, right, in this artificial environment, has not learned the human interactions and societal give and take.
But when Laura attacks during that first scene that she attacks in, I'm just like, holy shit, this kid kills indiscriminately.
Yeah, yes, yes. And I love it because, you know, Logan was raised in society, right? And was raised with social mores and the expectations of an understanding of what the social contract is. Laura doesn't have that. X-24 certainly doesn't have that.
Sure. Like, when Logan kills you, slice to the face, you're dead. You're dead right there. When Laura kills you, you're going to die in immense amounts of pain.
Sure. She might stab you 10 times where Logan has sliced you once and moved on. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really great. In a horrible, horrible way.
Yeah, that's right. In the worst possible way.
As I told you, Logan, she's a mutant like you. Very much like you.
Laura, Logan, and Xavier escape from Pierce and his Reavers. Another comic accurate. Donald Pierce does lead the Reavers. Mm-hmm. Reavers are these mutant hunters.
All cybernetically enhanced also?
Yep.
Okay,
yep. Cool. They slaughter the Morlocks, right? The mutants that live under the streets of New York City, of which Caliban is a member.
This is not Caliban's first appearance on this podcast, by the way.
Correct. He's in
Apocalypse.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Yep.
I like this version of Caliban much better.
This version of Caliban's great. Yeah.
Stephen Merchant's so good.
Did you see the solo series he did on HBO?
Wilfred or something? Was, No.
I know
what you're talking about. Yeah.
Really, really good. Really good. But, you know,
he's the original.
Also,
no, he's not Dwight, right? He's not the Dwight counterpart.
He didn't play Dwight, but he co-wrote
The Office, yeah.
And co-directed The
Office.
No,
the guy who plays Dwight is the pirate with the wooden eye from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And his name's not Dwight. It's Gareth.
Yeah. None of the names match up.
Yeah. 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 Hello, Ladies was
Hello, Ladies
was the series.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is really good. Really.
I'm thinking of Ricky Gervais's show. He had a show that was like a one name thing that he was like a socially awkward, like hard comb over hair character.
Well, Ricky Gervais. That was I think he was actually developmentally disabled.
Oh, then let's not talk about it. Let's move on.
Derek.
I don't want to talk about it.
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
I could be totally wrong in that, to be fair. I did not watch it, but context clues, that was my take on it.
No, right. This could be a blank man situation where I thought the same thing.
Sure.
I'm hoping that's the answer.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Laura, Logan, and Xavier escape from Pearson as Reavers, but Caliban is captured.
Bomb.
Like, let's talk about filmmaking and building a scene. The tension that is established when Logan and Charles are outside in the limo. They've been stopped by the Reavers, and Pierce sends his men to look for Laura.
Uh-huh.
The tension that builds because to your point, we haven't seen her go feral yet. We just know that they want her.
Yeah.
But there's such palpable tension as they enter that one like shed building.
Right.
The moment she pops her claws and attacks, oh my God.
Well, we get a context clue that she's kind of a murderous monster by the fact that the one mercenary that's sent in loses his head.
We'll see part of him a few moments later. Yeah, that's right. She fucking rolls out the head like a bowling ball.
Yeah, it's so great. Yeah. Yeah, it's wonderful. It's so well done. I do enjoy during the escape because we're about to leave this section.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put a note here. I'm sorry.
No.
When he's trying to go through the chain link fence, this may be the first time in cinematic history we see a chain link fence do what is it designed to do?
That's right.
Not just fall over like a house of cards. Like when he hits it, it goes brrr, and it like springs him back. I'm like, holy shit, yes, that is what a chain link fence should do.
That's right, 100%. Pierce tortures Caliban into tracking Laura, and I was just gushing over Stephen Merchant, which we've done.
Yeah.
Xavier and Logan watch a video on Gabriella's phone.
All right, hey kids, let's talk for a minute about this scene takes me right out of the fucking movie every time that I watch it, because you're telling me she filmed all this shit in found footage format, and no one fucking noticed her phone. Come on.
Sure.
That's too far. That's a bridge too far. Now, does it affect my score of the movie? Absolutely not. But every time the scene comes up, I'm going to go, come on. This is stupid. Like, even watching it the first time, I was like, this doesn't work for me.
So, serving my role as finding a logical explanation. Oh,
boy. We fucking go.
Yeah. I will say, she makes a point of saying she'd worked for Alkali Transigen for years, right? For a long time. I can't remember the time frame she gives, but it's a long time.
Sure.
So my headcanon is, well, it's Gabriella. You know, she's been here forever. You know, it's Gabriella. She's sweet. She brings
her film sensitive documents? Nah.
I think she knows, like, where and when and how she can film stuff.
Well, look, once again, this does not change my score. I am Tommy Lee Jones in the sewer in the Fugitive.
I don't care.
Yeah,
but also, as my job as the resident pedant on this show, I need to point out that in no universe does this make sense. That's fair.
I'm trying to find an explanation, but you're right. That's
it makes no sense. But also, I don't give a shit.
Right, which is even better.
Yeah.
So this video on Gabrielle's phone reveals that Transigen created Laura and other children from mutant DNA to become weapons. And I'll be honest with you, I think I missed it on the first watch of this. I think I mistakenly thought that she was a clone of Wolverine.
She is.
Right.
Well, they use her DNA and someone else's egg, but she's in essence. So in the comics, because
later on we'll see Dr. Rice.
Rice, yes. The wonderful Richard E. Grant, yes.
Yep. He makes a point of saying, like, basically growing mutants the old-fashioned way is too inefficient, right? That cloning was a better solution. It gave them what they needed.
Oh, when he was monologuing? Yeah.
Yeah, when he was monologuing. Exactly. So in my mind, they had DNA tissues. They took an egg, right? Like, they used that. There's a little bit of science. But X-24 is supposed to be distinctly different from the way in which Laura came about.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're saying X-24. I thought you were saying X-24. Laura. Okay.
No.
We literally see the piece of paper that says DNA James Howlett. So, like, yeah. She's a clone.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think she's a clone. I think she is. I think they have a way of manipulating. So they would need his sperm.
Gross.
You know, with the egg to essentially do like an artificial insemination to create a descendant of Logan. I think X-24 specifically is an actual clone, not the way that Laura was created.
I think much like Laura and Deccan, is that his other?
Deccan. This is the era of Marvel that I don't really.
I think they are technically children of Logan, but they are children, much like Damian is the child of Batman. It's not consensual how they got that sperm.
Sure, but if you're talking sperm, then it's fertilization as opposed to cloning. I don't know.
I think it's purposefully vague in this movie for the payoff at the end.
So the only problem I have with that is I feel like there's this precipitating event that caused Gabriella to try to, you know, to save Laura.
Oh, when they just tried to straight up murder all the children? Yeah.
Because specifically Dr. Rice basically says, you know, we have a better way now. Like, this is an inefficient way, like, growing.
And that's
them.
X-24,
we'll just clone them. Yeah, so I feel like there has to be a difference in their origins.
Which, I don't know if you caught, but when she was, like, filming all the different files, Laura is X-23 because she is the first. All the rest of the kids that are there are also X-23, dash, and a number.
Oh, interesting.
And one of the numbers we see is X-23-44, which I go, there are not 44 kids there.
Yeah. Fuck. Oh, sure.
That's fucking dark.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a recycling bin that's
God
smells. Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
but this is you know, Project X, Weapon X type stuff. Like,
yeah,
Laura is X-23, the project, and then they make different clones of her, or different versions of the same, and that's why X-24 is X-20. It's a little wishy-washy on how it is, and I don't think. Again, I don't care. It doesn't affect my grading of this film, but I think it's purposely vague in some ways because maybe James Mangold's like, I don't want to get weighed down in the sci-fi because guys, gals, non-binary pals, in the end, Logan is a fucking Western.
Yeah, 100%.
And through and through.
My note there is, we're going to get to it in a bit here, but yeah, it's 100%.
Yeah. So why do we need sci-fi in my Western?
Yeah.
So I'm okay with them being purposely scientifically vague, as they call it in Star Trek, technobabbling their way through this shit. That's like, right. I'm fine. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, that's fair. So this video on Gabrielle's phone reveals that Transigen created Laura and the other children from mutant DNA to become weapons. The children proved challenging to control and were to be executed, but Gabriella and other nurses helped some escape. Xavier reveals to Logan that Laura was created from Logan's DNA and calls her Logan's daughter. So it's been often said, we didn't come up with this idea, This is clearly a Western, both in tone, but also...
No, we're the first podcast in existence to call this a Western.
I am interested, though, in the choice of movies that James Mangold shows us to reinforce this is a Western. So when they're in the hotel...
Do you know why it's Shane?
Well, because in Shane, the hero dies at the end.
That is not why it's Shane.
Okay, tell me more.
It is Shane because the story that Xavier tells...
I first saw this picture at the Isolde Cinema in my hometown when I was your age.
Sir Pat Sue's actual story.
Okay, so I don't know how to square this then, so I wonder if you have a reaction to this. So, as we know from a prior Patreon season, I am a fan of Westerns. And I think I think you can very easily put Westerns into one of two buckets, right? The romantic and the bleak, right? And I would put as evidence of the bleak, you know, bleak would be Clint Eastwood's, one of his greatest movies, Unforgiven. That's
sure. The Unforgiven Western is definitely bleak. Oh, I guess. Yeah. And then Shane falls more romantic.
Shane is the exact opposite. Is that romantic? Even though Shane dies at the end, it's a very clear...
Does he, though?
Yes, he's dead. He's dead.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I'm just aping the negotiator right now.
That's right. So there is no way that this movie falls into the... Well, oh, fuck. Okay, I've talked myself out of it. Does he? No, this is good. So is it correctly Shane? Because even though Shane dies, that's not what defines it. It is that there is hope and optimism at the end of the movie for the next generation, right? Okay, all right. Okay, this movie correctly shows us Shane because that is... Well, yeah, no, I'm there now.
Well, I'll wait till the end.
Okay.
Don't talk about it now. I have a question, but we're not there, so I can't.
Okay.
I'll remember. Don't worry.
Okay, all right.
Because right now we are in Oklahoma City.
Yes, we are.
Looks mighty pretty if you're on Route 66. Oklahoma. I was going for a different song reference.
I don't. Oh, if you get your kicks, sure, sure.
On Route 66. Okay. In Oklahoma City, Logan discovers that Eden appears in Laura's X-Men comics and tells her it's fictional. Just fucking love all of this.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Charles. We got ourselves an X-Men fan. You do know they're all bullshit, right? I mean, maybe a quarter of it happened, and not like this.
This, if we had real mutants, this is what would happen. These comic book stories would be sensationalized. Yeah. Like... And I think it's kind of like, as a kid of the 90s of reading the comics then, they got a little soapy at times. So maybe this is Mangold's being like, yeah, there's a time where these comics got real fucking weird.
You know, what I love about this, so I don't know if there's a term for this. Our mutual friend and friend of the podcast, Corey Hopkins, is responsible for me learning about the concept of diegetic music, which is...
Sure.
Music that is an overarching music that is for the movie, but is also part of the fictional world and heard by the characters. I don't know.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure. Is this diegetic comics, right? Like it's almost so meta.
I think it falls more under meta, like the fact that when we see the pictures in the comic, it's not wide-eyed Wolverine.
Sure.
And it kind of resembles Hugh Jackman, and the rogue that's there kind of looks like Anna Paquin, but not, it's not like Alex Ross.
Okay.
Drew a picture of Wolverine as Hugh Jackman wearing the Wolverine mask. You get there that it's Hugh Jackman. They couldn't get the licensing rights.
if they existed in the world, you would draw them to look kind of like the people that were real people in the world. Okay, I'm fair.
Yeah. I really enjoy this scene a lot. Just how rip shit pissed Logan is. And once again, Xavier's like, it's all right. We don't have to be mad at the child. I'm like, well, I think we do. I think we do at this point, Charles.
Yeah, Charles is... Yes, please, continue.
All right. The Reavers arrive, ruh-roh, but Xavier has a seizure and incapacitates everyone except Logan and Laura, who kill the attackers, inject Xavier with his medicine.
We've talked about it a little bit. This scene, first of all, do you think that they're all pantomiming being frozen? Like, do you think that there's no, like, change of camera speeds? Because I think this is just everyone pretends to be frozen, and Hugh Jackman is pretending to be, like, wading through molasses to get to them. I don't think this is a changing film speed or anything.
If I remember correctly, he may be wearing a weighted belt.
Okay, to give him more, But otherwise, weight. Just practical acting?
I think it's practical acting, and they do the rest in post. I don't think they're doing the J.J. Abrams shaking the camera on. You know about this?
No, but that as I was thinking through this, I was like, okay, so if that's just them acting, how do they do the camera? Did they just shake it? And I hope
that's literally
no.
For all the Star Trek movies when they would have to do what is affectionately known by Trekkies, bangers.
Yep.
When you know, that's when everyone do this.
Yeah.
JJ would take the sides of the camera and go blah, 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 and shake it. And I'm sure the DP just fucking loved his multi-million-dollar camera just being shaken.
Right.
I'm like, hey, hey, JJ, don't fucking do that.
Yeah. That's right. That's tough. This scene is so fucking good. And it's from, does the seizure happen? Is he in the elevator or is he like on the ground floor?
He's on the ground floor.
So he having to make his way upstairs. And again, Hugh Jackman, fuck. I mean, we've never seen, I'm running out of words to explain how fucking awesome this is.
Yeah. I also enjoyed this little montage of him trying to get a new car. Yeah. And the woman's like,
say what, $8,000? I'll have her freshly painted for you. New tires, mounted, balanced, and complete paperwork.
I'll give you 10 as is if you can forget the paperwork.
Well, you still need new tires, man. They're bald.
How long will that take?
Hour.
Did you see the giant vape she was smoking?
No, I missed it.
Oh, it was like an old brick phone. It was so big. I'm like, oh God, is that what we're going towards?
Yeah. Huh, that's funny.
Wolverine stabs everyone in the head.
Everyone!
Except for, obviously, Laura and Xavier. Charles. As they flee, Dr. Xander Rice, head of Transigen, arrives to help Pierce.
Logan, Laura, and Xavier help farmer Will Munson.
Now,
you and I just talked about this.
I want to know the story behind how Eric LaSalle ended up in this film. When he shows up in this film, I was like, Peter Benton?
This is no disrespect. I think it's just, so I'm looking right now, his last film role was 2000, before this was 2009. Actually,
I believe he became a director though.
There were two television films released in 2009, neither of which I've heard of. He does have directing credits.
And I think he's much like Noah Wiley. I believe he is a theater guy. Okay. So,
okay.
But, I say this here, but I think I know when Eric LaSalle gets this script,
mm-hmm.
what the scene makes him go, I'm going to fucking do this comic book movie.
Okay.
We'll get to it in a minute.
Okay, great. The farmer, Will Munson, and his family are helped by Logan, Laura, and Xavier. After a traffic incident, accepting an offer of dinner at their home, where Logan drives off enforcers from a corporate farm.
And what a great fucking scene.
Who's this? Just a guy telling you to get back in your nice truck. Go play Okie Dickhead somewhere else.
This is the kind of movie, certainly by this far in, and we knew this a while back, but certainly at this moment, this is the kind of movie where you don't want any character to show up and be nice to the protagonist. Because you're like,
100%.
Oh, that's not going to work out well for you. Just drive past. Drive. Don't give him a ride. Nope, don't give him a ride. Nope, don't offer him a meal. Just keep going. Keep trucking.
Also, this scene cements this as a Western. In a normal action movie, mm-hmm. it would have been, they're invited to dinner. They have dinner. X-24 shows up. This random little subplot with the water.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just got Western written all over it because now it's a new threat that you weren't expecting that shows up during the big battle.
So
that's Western 101. Like, you think it's about this stuff, but there's this other thing that's going to be mildly annoying to the character.
Yeah. The confrontation at the pump station brought to mind for me what I think should be like the official poem of Logan. And I am, of course, referring to Alfred Lord Tennyson's Ulysses. And specifically, if I may, I feel like Colin is the only person that'll appreciate this. But
Jesus fucking
I'm going to go for it. Though much is taken, much abides. And though we are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are, we are. One equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. That, if that fucking stanza from Ulysses does not sum up this fucking movie, you know, from the moment that we see him hobbling through the cemetery at the beginning, to this moment where he is strong in the confrontation, and then you can we also love physical acting, right? Like,
yeah,
he is in that confrontation. He's fucking Wolverine, right? Like,
yeah.
Even if you don't recognize him, no one wants a piece of that. The second they're gone, you can see him lets the air out of himself.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh fuck, he's dying. He's failing. He's weak. But
when he
fuck.
Breaks the rifle over his knee, I'm like, that's like fucking Wonder Woman breaking the rifle with her back. Cool. And Eric LaSalle being like, did you just fucking, like, he is like, oh, I'm glad this guy's on my side.
So we've talked about birthdays, right? You're about to be 43. I'm about to be 53.
It's true.
But the reality is, you know, this is a movie that I think you need a little bit of age to appreciate.
Sure.
You know, this is not Wolverine on the slope upwards towards his peak. This is post peak. This is a Wolverine who is not what he once was. And the saddest part is, you know, when you're on the climb up, you don't know where the peak is, right? You're like, I just know there's more in front of me. But fuck. He knows that the peak is behind him. He knows he's not what he was. And yet, in these moments, and again, this is part of what I think they drew from Old Man Logan, was that idea that he's so much less than he was, but he knows what he was. And there are times when he can draw on that. Maybe it's only for a moment, but fuck. This scene to me might be, despite, even though I love the visceral R-rated violence throughout the movie,
this might be the best scene of the film.
Yeah, I think so.
It's the most well acted, because you've got like two very natural actors, like Eric LaSalle. As I've said multiple times, I am rewatching ER.
Yep.
God, he's so fucking good, because he's so fucking punchable as Benton. Everything that Benton does, you're like, fuck you, Benton. But you have to imagine that Eric LaSalle is not this dick in real life.
And so far from he's not. Daryl Jenks in Coming to America, right? With the Jerry Curl juice, you know, staining the sofa. Yeah, yes. I mean, it's almost jarring him in this scene or this whole sequence. Yeah.
You got him, you got Hugh, that are two just so naturalistic actors.
Yep.
That, Jesus, it's just, God, it's so good.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. Okay. No, let's move forward.
It's worth gushing over. I mean, that's a phenomenal scene in this amazing movie. There's like this whole bit, to your point, that didn't have to exist.
Yeah, and it gives us the tell at, you know, if you didn't know beforehand that Logan's kind of fucked, after that scene ends, in any other Wolverine movie, he'd just be like, boop, ba-doop, boop, boop. Anyways, let's move on. That moment that he takes where he's like, okay, I just use a lot of energy. I need a second.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, God, Logan.
Yeah. Because we've seen Logan. We know what we want him to do.
Yeah.
Shit.
Do the thing.
Do the thing. Rice unleashes X-24, a mindless clone of Logan in his prime, created as Transigen's ultimate weapon. X-24 murders Will's family and Xavier before capturing Laura.
God.
Charles' death is shocking. There's no other way to frame it.
No, there's no other way to frame it. And Logan being like,
it wasn't me.
Yeah, because Charles is arguably the closest thing to a father figure he has.
But also he knows Charles has dementia, and he's like, I don't want you to think.
Oh, yeah, it's so fucking heartbreaking.
Like the vague idea of Logan's face being there. So the black and white of this, something about Hugh's eyes as X-23 is very fucking unsettling.
Yeah.
In the black and white. I don't remember it being that unsettling in color, but like when he's walking down the stairs, I was like, Jesus Christ, no thank you.
So my assumption is we don't have different levels of Hugh's fitness. I assume that Hugh gets to Wolverine level and he's ready. My assumption is what we are seeing in most of the movie is Hugh, you know, them supplementing his natural age, making him look older.
100%.
Are they digitally de-aging him, or are they doing like the little tape to smooth out lines?
I think they're doing the tape practical. Up here to... Yeah. I think they're doing that. And also just simply the fact that his hair is not gray will definitely do a lot of the work to make him... I mean, Hugh still looks youthful. You look at him now, sure. He's not... He's 55?
He better be way younger than me. I'm going to be pissed. Yeah.
Oh, wait. He is 55.
Motherfucker. Jesus Christ.
Beware the light.
Caliban sets off grenades, killing himself and several Reavers, but only injuring Pierce. It took me a second to realize what he was saying. So when he grabs the grenade belt and then Pierce sees that he's got it, he says, beware the light.
Beware the light.
Which is what Pierce said to him before he tortured him, right? When he rips the, you know, he opens up the...
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So good. Logan is outmatched by X-24, but Will pins X-24 with his truck before dying from his injuries.
And this, guys, gals, non-binary pals, is the reason Eric LaSalle does this film. Yeah. This moment of sudden... Because, like we've talked in the past, mutants have always been, up until the X-Men movies, and probably now in the comics, it's probably this way too, has been... racism,
mm-hmm.
more than homosexuality, which is what Bryan Singer kind of made it be.
Sure.
Which is fine. He's a gay man. I have no problem.
And I think the original was racism, but yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Original, even when I was reading in the 90s, it was racism.
Yes.
This is racism. Yeah. And having a person of color be racist here, I know that you're a mutant now too, so I'm going to kill you because all mutants must die, is just such a power. I mean, he pulls the fucking trigger. He pulls the trigger and dies.
Yeah, it clicks. He's out. Yeah.
He dies trying to kill Logan. This is why I think, like, I had the thought at the beginning, like, why is Eric LaSalle in this movie? And I had forgotten about this moment.
Yeah.
And when it happened in the, I seem to remember this may have been the same thought cycle I had. Why is Eric LaSalle in this movie? Oh, that's why Eric LaSalle's in this movie. Because this is juicy fucking shit. This is stuff that's just...
Agree.
Yeah. He's so good.
Logan and Laura escape with Xavier's body. And I think this is where Laura speaks for the first time. And Logan's reaction to that is delightful, right?
Oh, no, it's not yet. Fuck? It's after he passes out.
So,
after burying Xavier, and my question here is, how many times are fans of X-Men going to have to watch Charles Xavier die and go to his fucking funeral?
Clearly at least one more.
Fucking tired of it.
One more because it's going to happen.
Spoiler alert!
Well, we don't go to his funeral. I'm going to cut that. But no, X-Men 97. We're going to see Charles's, because he dies in the original X-Men series.
Does he really?
In 97, they're going to...
Him and Optimus Prime, they go out in a blaze of glory.
How fucking dare you bring up Thelma Optimus Prime? I'm still scarred. After burying Xavier, Logan passes out. How much fun must it have been to shoot that scene where he just trashes the truck?
Yes. Right.
Like, that's an actor's fucking dream.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I just have to come in like a rage monster and start trashing shit.
Right.
Yes. And.
Yes, and.
He passes out. Logan takes him to a doctor and persuades him to prove that the site in North Dakota is not Eden. Apparently, They have a different dictionary in this alternate universe, because persuading apparently in this universe means punching them in the nose repeatedly and screaming at them in Spanish.
I don't know how you got me here, but thank you.
De nada.
Yeah. You can talk? Fuck. Why the fuck? What's all this bullshit been for the last 2,000 fucking miles?
Shut the fuck up!
At that point in the movie, I turned on subtitles, which, you know, behind the curtain, you and I have shared. Sometimes we will turn on subtitles to ensure that we get dialogue correct, especially if we're watching it where we need to keep the volume down and want to make sure I understand it. I love that the subtitles did not tell me what she was screaming in Spanish. I love that.
Yeah, I, you know, it's like in Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse. They don't give subtitles for when Miles is speaking Spanish to his mom.
Sure, that's right.
Nor should they.
That's right.
Figure it out for yourself, you asshole.
You know, it clearly says Afghanistan, which, folks, is a callback all the way back to season one. Yes.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's a deep cut, buddy.
That was when I, like a dumbass, pointed out that we didn't exactly know what conflict Iron Man 1 starts in, except for the fact that it clearly says Afghanistan in the beginning.
Sure fucking does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little inside baseball. That's a running joke for the last 7 seasons that I feel like sometimes folks that didn't.
And you brought it back.
Yeah, because I'm afraid that we're missing.
So guess what, buddy?
Yeah.
I'm bringing it back too.
All right.
There they find Richter and the other transgen children preparing to cross into Canada. I love it. Logan's going home.
Yeah. You know, in a happier movie, Logan could have led these children like Batman leads the sons of Batman at the end of The Dark Knight Returns, right? Like he'd have his little tribe of, you know, in a PG-13 Logan, that's what would have happened. He would he would be the new Charles, right? He would be the headmaster of this, you know.
Not even in a PG-13. I'd say in a non-James Mangold movie. I'm sure the studio's like, are you sure you want to kill him?
He's like, shut the fuck up. We don't love the killing him part. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like this, it's probably the same studio heads were like, can't we just have Rogue find Logan in Alaska instead of Canada?
That's right. Can't, you know, could he fight a Thanagarian snare beast? Hey, right. Folks, that's a reference to...
No, stop. Hey, folks, Todd doesn't understand that if you point out the joke in a joke, it's no longer funny.
I know, but I'm worried that... Listen, I worry that sometimes our podcast is too much inside baseball.
Well, that's what keeps our listeners in... feeling
our
like
dozens of listeners.
This is what keeps them feeling good about listening to these two assholes for the past 7 seasons.
Okay,
like,
fair.
Oh, they do inside jokes, but they don't explain them.
That's right. Deal with it, people.
That's the point of an inside joke.
That's true. That's fair.
Anyways, so Laura finds an adamantium bullet that Logan has kept since he escaped from the Weapon X facility, which he once considered using to commit suicide. Not even once considered. It seems like the plan was, very darkly, get the Sunseeker, go out in the middle of the ocean where he knows no matter what happens to Charles,
he can't hurt anyone else.
He can't hurt anybody. And Logan offs himself and lets Charles just kind of die on his own.
Yeah.
That's what it really feels like.
It's dark, but I am 100% with you on that interpretation. Yep.
All right, so Logan decides not to accompany them, and to Laura's dismay, but not before, for some odd fucking reason, they have the children giggle away while they are cutting Hugh's beard into the Wolverine mutton chops. And still to this day, I don't know why they do this. Is it because they had to go back and do reshoots after they shot the X-23 things, so they had to make it make sense? Because there are shots where it's very clear this is his real beard, but then he's wearing prosthetics for the center of the mutton chops and the mustache.
Do you think maybe that is like the studio absolutely insisting that when Wolverine goes out, he has to go out looking like Wolverine?
I kind of wish he hadn't, but that might be it too. But that might be why they do it that way. But it's, even the first time I watched, I'm like, why is this happening?
Yeah, fair.
What? It's kind of dumb. But again. Don't care. Doesn't change my score of the movie.
Okay. When the Reavers ambush the children, Logan takes an overdose of a serum given to him by Richter that temporarily enhances his healing abilities and boosts his strength.
Now, have you ever seen, you know how I love ADR. Have you ever seen the ADR of
I have.
Hugh doing this? It's pretty epic.
There's just no way around the fact that you just have to look like a fucking ravenous beast, right? And that's what he does. Yeah.
So he does. His cans fall off because he's going like, he's running for real and not running for real, but like moving his arms. Yeah. And the best part, he's like, he is a savage beast when he is doing the ADR. And then at the end, he just turns to the camera. He's like, whoo, like, oh, that's a lot of work. I'm like, God, I don't know how you switch gears so quick like
he's
that, man.
Fucking a pro. He's not a fucking pro. He is a fucking pro. Well, that's right.
He may be a fucking pro. I don't know.
Be fucking pro. Who knows? With Laura's help, he slaughters most of the Reavers before the serum wears off. And my note here was exactly that. Again, this is what we wanted in X-Men 2 when the school gets overrun. This is it. Oh, my God.
Well, not only that, we get that. And then when Laura and Logan team up to fight, I was like, oh my God. Yes. Stop. My erection can only get so hard.
It can only get so hard. That's right. Feeling woozy.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
That's exactly correct. As Pierce holds Richter at gunpoint, Rice tells Logan, who killed Rice's father years ago at the Weapon X facility, that no new mutants have been born due to genetically engineered crops created by Transgen and distributed through the world's food supply.
Yeah.
Right? Logan, that won't come back to haunt us. We won't have any repercussions of that. I'm sure everything will be fine. Logan, having found a gun, shoots Rice dead and injures Pierce.
Not only shoots Rice dead, like mid-monologue.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm done.
100% mid-monologue, 100%.
Yeah, so great.
It's so great. X-24 fights Logan as the children combine their powers to kill Pierce and the remaining Reavers. I like how Pierce goes out.
He goes like a punk-ass bitch, much like Boba Fett.
Much like Boba Fett. That is the official position of this podcast, yes.
Yep, Boba Fett died like a punk-ass bitch in Return of the Jedi.
That's the end. Richter uses his powers to flip a truck onto X-24, but X-24 frees himself and impales Logan on a large tree branch, mortally wounding him. Laura loads Logan's revolver with the adamantium bullet and shoots X-24 in the head, killing him.
Taking off half his fucking face. First that, and also when Richter flips the... Now, when they say a truck in this synopsis, if you haven't watched this movie for any reason, it's not a truck. It's a Hummer on steroids.
Yeah, it's the Hummer designed to withstand a blast from underneath. Yeah, it's a
holy shit. It's so awesome when he flips it and then it lands and then it falls on X-24, and I'm like, fuck, that was great, Richter. Good job, buddy.
Yeah, and again, it is just so hard to put into words how good this entire ending sequence is, and specifically how amazing Jackman is in the last time that he will ever portray this character.
Well, no, we've already talked about it, and it's not a secret because it's in the trailer. It's how they announced Deadpool 3. So I have no problem saying that Hugh is coming back as Wolverine.
And we are here for it.
And how. Also, this also cements it as a Western because our two out of our three main villains, X-23, Rice, and
Pierce,
thank you so much.
You're welcome.
How do two out of those three people go out?
By guns. Nice. Oh, sure. Oh,
and unceremoniously, they just get shot and it's done.
Yeah.
They don't get shot and then there's like this
a big
something else like
death scene. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like especially X-24, half his brain's gone and he just falls to the ground.
Yeah. The end. Yep.
Love it. Okay. So near death, Logan tells Laura not to become the weapon she was made to be, and she tearfully acknowledges him as her father. And why am I crying?
Yes.
Oh,
because this is a fucking film.
When she says daddy,
yeah,
I just want Riley to be happy. I can't talk about it without getting a little teary.
Yep. Yep.
Fuck. Okay. Anyways, maybe the beer too. Let's say it's the beer too.
Sure. We'll go with that.
Logan dies peacefully in Laura's arms. She and the children bury Logan, and before they depart, Lauren tilts the cross on his grave marker to create an X, honoring him as a true Christian. Oh,
sorry.
Honoring him as the last X, because that's when they crucified people. It wasn't the T, it was an X.
Was it?
They didn't have a fucking T yet. Some fucking dipshit in the whatever time made it a T. No, the crucifixions were done as X's.
Oh, okay. All right.
As someone who's played Jesus, I should know
one
this.
Of the Jesus. That's correct. All I know is that the nails don't go through the hands. They go through the wrists. That's all I know.
And also, the thing that actually kills you is pretty fucking terrible.
Dehydration?
Nope. When your arms are up like this, you can't take a full breath. You, in essence, drown.
Got it.
You drown because your lungs fill with liquid because they can't take a proper breath. It's a horrible way to die.
Sure.
Yeah. So he is actually the last of the X-Men, and fade to black. We get Logan on the screen.
Yep.
And
movie.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same.
Oh, fuck.
Buddy, we fucking did it.
God, you know, I gotta say, I went lighthearted with my birthday pick. You were not fucking around. You picked the cream of the crop there. Holy shit. Well done, sir.
It was sitting right there. Like I said, when the last episode where I had the Suicide Squad, I was like, okay, sure, that's fun.
It would have been great.
And then I'm like, okay, what do we got?
Holy shit.
What do we got in Marvel? Black Panther. I'd rather not the white dudes choose that. I'd rather that just be picked naturally. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, well, we got the X universe. What's there? Oh, fuck, it's Logan. We're fucking doing Logan.
Right. Yeah, well played.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. So, Todd.
Yes, sir.
We, of course, as always, have some questions.
We got some questions.
And this first one's going to be tough.
It's
Todd, who's your favorite character?
I mean, it's Logan.
Okay, that's fair.
There's a lot to love, but it's fucking Logan.
Here's the thing. With a lot of other movies where we do our favorite scene, if you had said any other major character in this film, I'm like, oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
if you said no fucking
weak spots in the film.
Eric LaSalle, I'm like, yeah, sure. He's great. Yeah,
sure. Yep. Agree. Casey, are you okay with Logan?
Oh, yes. It's Logan for me, too. Yeah.
Well, you heard what mine was, but best scene.
I'm going to go with you. Yeah. It's that scene, the water thing,
the pump. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Yep.
Okay. Is there anything you would cut? Because my answer is no. I want more. I want the director's cut. I want more fucking Logan.
With the credits, which there's no need to sit through, there's no post-credit scene, but with the credits, it's 2:17. The actual story ends around like 2:05-ish.
Yeah.
2:11. But that said, no. Why would you cut anything?
Because while this is not a fast-paced movie, it continues pretty much, even the action scenes continue the same pace that the movie sets in that first scene. There's going to be action, but it's not going to be Michael Bay. Right?
Sure. Fucking God.
Yeah. It's so good. It's so fucking good.
Yep. Agree. And then finally, and this one might be interesting, Casey, who is the actor having the most fun?
I'm going to say Sir Pat Stew. I think he was having a lot of fun playing this demented, tortured version of Charles. Like, this is
He's playing older than himself, right? Which can be fun, right? To your point, right?
No, he's playing 97.
Yeah, he's not 97 yet.
90.
I mean, he's old, but I mean, like, he's... But again, this movie is 7 years old now. So, 7 years ago,
He's 83. He's not even close.
Oh, he's 83 now. So 7 years ago, he was 76. Yeah.
I'm thinking of Bill Shatner is 92.
Got it. That's crazy.
That's right. He doesn't get
Bill Shatner's only 10 years older than 9 years older than Sir Patrick Stewart.
Yep. Wow. That's why in Generations it worked.
And one of them is such a phenomenal actor.
And an amazing humanitarian. Another
and
one.
An amazing human.
Is one Bill of the Shatner. Only surviving members of the TOS era movies.
Oh, good Lord. All right.
We so, said Casey, what we I, said.
We said it. We said it. Boba Fett is a punk ass bitch. Oh, no. That too. All right. So, Casey, I don't know if you remember from last time. Do you
remember being criminally low?
The IMDb score. Want to make a guess?
Is it like in the sevens?
Barely. No, it's an 8.1.
Hey, guess what? This is a 10.
This is a fucking 10.
This is 100%. A perfect movie.
No,
it's not a perfect movie, but the moments that make me go, meh, that didn't work for me, are completely overshadowed by everything else going on in this film.
I don't understand. This is not what I would think of as like a superhero movie, right? Like I love, you know, love the visuals and the soaring and sweeping of the MCU, but oh my God, this movie is so fucking good.
There's a large chunk like post Oklahoma City to pretty much X-24 showing up. You can forget that this is a superhero film.
Sure. Yes. Agreed.
And suddenly, you know, a clone of our main character shows up and starts killing people. You're like, oh, right, superhero movie.
That's going to be a problem. Yeah. Yep. Agree. So Casey, how would you rate it then? Oh, no, we've said, I'm sorry. We just both said that. Okay.
Oh boy.
Sorry.
Have another one.
So Casey, yeah. No, I think the one was enough.
Since you're repeating questions. Yeah.
Yep. I sure am. Hey Casey.
Yeah.
This is a special time of the episode.
Oh boy. Are we there already?
Fuck. Yeah. You have the responsibility of pulling a great movie for our next,
don't put that pressure on me. You cock.
You know, I think I just did.
And now it's time to pick the next movie from Thor's helmet.
All right. It's your fault if we don't.
Oh, I don't think so. Oh, I won't be accepting that.
All right. Here we go. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Here we go. All right. I have multiple slips, but I'm just going to take one. Oh. No.
Oh, no. Come on.
We are watching The Guyver.
Oh, fuck.
The Mark Hamill superhero movie.
Yeah. Which is not about... The oh, fuck is not about Mark Hamill.
No, I'm very excited for Mark Hamill to be on this podcast, but... Oh, wait. The TSPHD Army, we didn't get Mark Hamill to be on our podcast. I realized the way I said that, like...
Right.
Suddenly we have this huge uptick in listeners.
There's no way this is going to be good. This came out in 1991.
Oh, it was no. Seven, okay. Wait a minute. Hang on. Did this get a theatrical? Let's start fucking there.
Mm-hmm. Not fucking there. But...
The Guyver, 1991. Oh, God, the poster. The poster does not make me feel good about this. I'm hoping this didn't get a theatrical and I can pull a different movie.
United States, USA Film Festival. I think it's...
Wait a minute. Is it just a film festival?
No. I see a limited release, yes, in the United States.
Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I got bad news, buddy.
Well, let's watch that trailer.
Your friend... found a most valuable item. I must find out how he managed to activate it. The Guyver unit. I need your help. You saw it work. Tell me, how did your friend activate it?
I said, let her go.
The Guyver?
I don't feel good about any part of this, Todd.
Okay.
I'm worried.
Would you like to take a guess at what the IMDb rating for the 1991 The Guyver is?
Oh, God. It's going to be low, I feel like. I don't know.
It's a good instinct. You should lean in on that. Yeah.
So, wait a minute. It might be low, but also the fact that it has Mark Hamill in it, I feel we'll have a lot of people defending this movie and being like, it's not as bad. So I'm going to say this is probably sitting in the middle, like at a 5, 5.3, somewhere in there.
Close, 4.9. So, okay. All right. So your thought process did not do you a disservice.
God, except we got to watch this fucking film.
And I
believe there's a sequel also sitting
I believe there's one
sequel. Hang on. Let me look to you.
That must have been a direct to video. There's no way a sequel got a mainline release. There's no way. I refuse to acknowledge that.
Oh no. Oh, those are TV Don't series. Say Thank multiple. God.
Oh, it's a series. Okay.
No, there's Guyver, Dark Hero.
Well, oh fuck. Okay. Oh yeah, the film generated enough interest for a sequel.
But did that get
Guyver, a Dark Hero? Did it get a release? Let's see.
Well, I don't see Mark Hamill release. In the.
No, it was direct to video. It was direct to video. Okay,
so we're just gonna watch the Guyver.
Thank God. Oh, thank God. Okay.
Because Mark Hamill's not in the Lord. Sequel, and that just makes me go, oh.
Okay. All right. Well. So next time, Casey, we're going to watch The Guyver. You know, some folks may have some feelings about the various things we've discussed tonight. What's the best way for them to share those feelings with us?
Tom, before I say that, I was feeling so good. It's my birthday. Yeah. We're doing a birthday pick. I'm a little tipsy from this very strong beer. And then The Guyver has to come in and shit in my mouth. I'm not happy about any part of this.
You're not into that.
And if you're not happy with the things we said during this podcast, the easiest way to get in touch with us is to go to your email server of choice.
I was wondering how you're going to get there.
superpodherocast@gmail.com because
only Cap writes letters.
Tony.
Music for our podcast comes to us from two places. Our theme song is Take a Chance by Kevin MacLeod. Mm-hmm. Find his music at incompetech.com.
Sure can.
Our beer music is Feather Duster by Shane Ivers. Find his music at silvermansound.com.
So that'll do it for the Superpod HeroCast for this week. For Todd Panic, I'm Casey Ryan.
For Casey Ryan, I'm Todd Panic.
Be heroic. The fucking Guyver?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, listen.
I try and get us on the right track, and then
listen, the universe is like, nope. There's a lot of shit left in the old helmet there, so.
Commander, where are we?
We seem to be stuck in an alternate dimension. And you're no longer a captain, you're a commander.
Dear God, are you a lieutenant? And why are you talking like that?
Oh, no, I don't know why I'm talking like that. But no, I seem to have no rank, only the title of doctor?
I don't think there are admirals either.
Captain, commander, Look, Casey, we are getting a message. It seems we have been tasked with reviewing a historical document entitled Galaxy Quest?
Then there's no moment to spare. Engage!
I don't think Nitro Radio Legal has cleared usage of engage, so you might want to just dial that back there.
All right. Well, then I guess it's up to us to say join us over on the Where No Mom Has Gone Before podcast as we review 1999's Galaxy Quest.
Never give up. Never surrender.
Mom?